when you see somebody working in their spiritual gifts without love, it's kind of a cruel thing. It's kind of a disgusting thing in many ways. I heard of an overseer one time that had to go down to a church in Alabama, and I don't know which church it is, so no, pointing no fingers here. He had to go down to a church in Alabama and straighten out a church fight because they were using their spiritual gifts to rebuke each other. And so this was an old-fashioned church. It was an old King James Bible and nothing but King James Bible. And so he had to go in there. And he said, I walked in the back door, and this, I'm quoting this guy. He said, I walked in the back door, and this is what I heard. Heard a guy on one side get up and point at a guy on the other side. And he says, thou thinkest that thou art a humdinger, but the Spirit would have thee to know that thou art just a dinger. That's the true story. I wish I was making it up, but it's a true story. Thou thinkest that thou art a humdinger, and they were, but thou art just a dinger. They were using their spiritual gifts, and then another guy would stand up and rebuke the other guy with something ridiculous like that, and all in the King James language. So just because it was King James and it looked spiritual, folks, how many of you know that was not God? That was not spiritual. It's quite comical, but it was not God. I had the same thing happen to me, and I think I've told this story before, but it's one of the craziest things that ever happened to me as a kid. You know, I grew up in a real strict holiness church, and everything was a sin. I mean, they sang songs like, if your hair is too long, you got sin in your heart. I mean, it's just, everything was a sin. And if you don't know that song, don't learn it. You didn't miss a thing, I promise you. So, everything was wrong. I mean, everything was wrong, and we were scared to death all the time. I remember as a kid, I'd pray the prayer, God, if I've done anything to offend you, I was so afraid of going to hell. And I, God, if I've done anything, because I just knew I'd slipped up and sinned, even though I was trying not to. And so there was four of us teenagers out on Kennesaw Mountain. It was down in Georgia. Was out on Kennesaw Mountain one day, walking on a trail on a Sunday afternoon, and we found a cigarette butt. Now, my church was really hard on that. I mean, everything was wrong, but smoking, boy, I don't know why, but they were really tough on that one. And so these four teenagers, we were thinking, man, why does everybody think it's so bad? We had this nasty old butt and had about that much left, and we don't know who it belonged to. It still had somebody's nasty old lips on it somewhere, but we decided we were going to smoke it because we were just curious. And I was about 13, and I'm the pastor's son, right? And so we somehow, you know, delicately carried that thing out of the woods and went to a gas station and got a hold of some matches. We lit that old thing up, and each of us took one puff apiece. Now, it's the only, I'd never smoked in my life, and I went, oh, that's good. Woo, that's good. It wasn't good, but I couldn't tell anybody it wasn't good because we all thought we were sinning. Well, in my church, if you offend in one point, you're guilty of all. So now we are what they would call rank sinners. So we had to go to the back row because we couldn't raise our hands anymore because we were all sinning. And so we were under conviction. We were on the back row, all four of us teenagers, and it was two boys and two girls, and one of the girls' name was Jean Grant, and she had really long blonde hair. And we were sitting there in church, and my dad preached one of those hell-hot sermons, Lord have mercy. And there was a group up there singing in the altar call, and I'm thinking, we can't go. Everybody knew something was wrong because we were kids that were always in the altars praying, and we're all sitting on the back row. We never sat on the back rows. They knew something was up. They just didn't know what. So Jean got under conviction, and we saw it, man. She's white-knuckling the bench in front of us. She's shaking her head just like this, and we're trying to talk her out of it. No, come on, Jean. Resist the Holy Ghost. Come on, Jean, you can't rat us out. Come on, Jean, you're our friend. Come on. We're trying to talk her out of conviction, and it's not working. All three of us are trying. We knew she's about to rat us out, and we're trying to beg her not to tell anybody, and all of a sudden, she starts shaking that blonde hair, swings her head back, and to the top of her lungs, she screamed, "We smoked!" All 30 people got dead quiet. They hadn't had a good smoker in the altar in a long time. I mean, they got quiet. And then we saw this. My dad's up there and all the rest of them. We had to sheepishly get out of our seat and go up. And that's when I learned that the spiritual gifts without love is quite abusive. I'm telling you what. They shook us and they beat our bellies and beat our cheeks and rubbed us down. And I mean, they were trying to get us saved. And they'd say, and they'd give you this trick question. Are you satisfied? They know there's no answer to that question. You can't be satisfied in God. That means you don't love him anymore. So they'd say, are you satisfied? And we'd say, no. All right, go down for another load. I mean, it'd take us down for another dip. Thank God we didn't have a Baptist in that church. They'd have dunked us all night long, I think. But they got us on the floor and shook us. And I mean, all kinds. They gave us the royal Holy Ghost legalistic treatment that night. We got it all. Spiritual abuse. I just want to tell you, and I just thought I would tell you a couple of stories. Hopefully you won't forget too soon. I just want to tell you that when you operate in the spiritual gifts, there needs to be something that makes that person want what you have. There needs to be something about that, something about the love inside of you, something about the joy of you, something about the peace, something about that spiritual fruit that says, I want what that person has. Not, God, I'm never going back to that church again because I don't like how they treat you in the altar. We can't scare people that way. We have to let the gifts of the Spirit be the barometer. Let it be the marker, the measurement of where we are with God when we're ministering to people.
Thank you so much for supporting our ministry. If this has blessed you, please say a prayer for us. And if you would like to give, we have four ways that you can do that. You can give online at briancutshaw.com. Or if you're a PayPal user, just PayPal us at Church Trainer. Or you can also give through the mail at P.O. Box 267, Georgetown, Tennessee, 37336. Or if you're a Venmo user, you can Venmo us also at Church Trainer. Thank you, and God bless you, and may the Lord multiply your seed. Now back to Hope in the Word.
So I told you that in the fruit of the Spirit, he ends with this strange statement. He gives us the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. And then he ends with this very strange statement, against such there is no law. Why does he say that? Against such there is no law. Doesn't that sound a little bit strange? It doesn't really belong with this beautiful list of attitudes and the way we should be acting to represent Christ and the kingdom well. Well, I think it's because in Matthew chapter 22, a lawyer comes to Jesus. And the lawyer is trying to trick him. He's a Sadducee lawyer, and he's trying to trick Jesus so that they can prove he's not the Messiah. So listen to this. This is in Matthew 22, verse 35. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? So Jesus said to them, here it is, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, and all of your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang what? All the what? Entire Old Testament. He said, if you love God with all of your heart and you love people as yourself, we're back to the golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated. If you love God with all of your heart and you love others as you love yourself, he said, you don't have to worry about breaking any of the rules of the Old Testament. Because the love of God and the love of people is going to cause you to always do the right thing. You don't have to worry about thou shalt not steal. You're not going to do that if you love God and you love the people. You have to worry about thou shalt not kill. You're not going to do that if you love God with all of your heart and all the people. So Jesus says, that is why he said, against such there is no law. If you've got the fruit of the Spirit inside of you, you can quit worrying about always offending God and everybody else. I don't know if you worry about that sometimes, but if you're worried about, I'm always doing something wrong. I'm always doing something wrong. I hope God still loves me. I just can't get it right. All you got to do is concentrate on letting love, joy, peace, goodness, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness, meekness, let that control your life. Self-control, let that be a part of who you are. And you don't ever have to worry about offending God because it's going to be organic. It's going to naturally begin to flow out of your life when you love God. So when you walk in love, you don't have to worry about the rules. I said earlier that I'd like to have that T-shirt that says "Follow the fruits and not the nuts." I think that is a real cute T-shirt. I don't know where Perry got that, but anyway, I almost changed. But I wanted to wear love tonight because it goes with my message. But here's the T-shirt I would wear. here's a t-shirt I want to wear, and one of these days I'll have one made, and this is what it's going to say. Say what you mean, just don't say it mean. If Christians could learn this one thing, speaking the truth in love, we could change our families and the world around us. If we can learn, don't back down, say what you mean, just don't say it mean. If you say it mean, no one heard you. If it say it mean, someone's already been offended. If you say it mean, you've already got problems on your hands because now you've got them on the defense. Say what you mean. If we could ever learn to master speaking the truth in love, man, how many times do we back down on the truth because we think we'll blow up if we say it? How many times do we miss a hard conversation because we can't have that hard conversation in love? If we could just have that hard conversation in love, it could heal our whole marriage. It could heal our whole life. There are some things you need to talk about, but you're never going to be able to discuss any of it with a mean spirit. If it's control, that's not of God. No, self-control is of God. Controlling others is not what he asks us to do. He asks us to control ourselves. The Lord said, I need to be kind. I need to be good. I need to let that be the criteria of which I guide my own life. The love, the joy, the peace. I wish we could learn the art of Ephesians 4 and 15, speaking the truth in love. Notice what this verse says. But speaking the truth in love, you may what? Whoa, I want everybody in the church to read that. I want everybody to say it when I get to that part after love. I want you to say the next three words with me. But speaking the truth in love, wow, that's our problem, isn't it? God says, you're just not spiritually mature. You think you are because you speak in tongues, but you're just not spiritually mature. He said, you're going to grow up in all things unto him who is the head, Christ. You're going to be Christ-like. You're going to be a Christian. Yeah, I just have to give props to this group, and I know that when we saw the assassination of Charlie Kirk, we talked quite a bit about Turning Point and really highlighted them, but I've got to give props to this group. That group, in my opinion, has made this a foundation of their beliefs. I've watched so many videos of not just Charlie, but even all those who followed him. I know they've been blasted by haters. Christians have always been blasted by haters. How many of you know that? Haters are always going to go after Christians, and I don't believe haters. I believe Christians. So you believe whatever you want to believe. I believe Christians. I believe if somebody's out there doing the work of the Lord and speaking kindly to others, but if you've ever watched those videos, you know what happens. People will scream and yell and cuss them out, and they will stand there, and they will quote scriptures, and they will be kind. It takes a grown-up to do that. And everybody can't do that. It takes a grown-up to let somebody get in your face and you stand there and you do the right thing when everybody around you is doing the wrong thing. That means you have reached a level of spiritual maturity that God can bless and God can use in your life. That's why Proverbs 15:1 says that a soft answer turns away what? Yeah, a soft answer turns away wrath. You know, if somebody's going to argue with you and you don't argue back, that's going to be a real short argument. It's not going to last long if you just don't, if you give a soft answer and they're screaming to the top of their lungs, after a while, that argument's over because it's only going to burst into flames when both of you are going at each other's jugular vein. That's when it's going to burst into flames. But if one can say, God, let me pass the test. If I don't pass it today, let me pass it tomorrow. Don't beat yourself up if you fail the test. Just take it again. How many of you have a driver's license? How many of you know, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, if you fail the first time, you have to take it again. They just don't give those things away. It's a shame, isn't it? How many of you know that if you don't pass the test, you have to take it again? I'm not going to ask for all the brave people in the room that had to take it more than once. I'm not even going to ask you to raise your hands. But if you are here, just smile at me so I know, oh, I'm not alone. I see them all over the face. Listen, there's a lot more than I thought. Here's the thing. If you fail the test, you have to take it again. And that's how God works. God says, listen, I'll let you fail the test over and over and over. He said, I'll wait 40 years in the wilderness until you give me the right answer. I will let you wait 3 days in the belly of a well before you give me the right answer. I'll let you take the test over and over. I don't know about you, but I hate it when God has to chastise me for something I thought I'd already learned. Does anybody besides me hate to take the same test over? It's like, God, I thought I got that down, and here I am again having to do again. See, you don't get to go up a level till you pass that level. And if God's wanting to do great things in you, God can do good things through your energy, but God can do great things through your heart. Passion can turn the world upside down.
This program is brought to you by the partners of Brian Cutshaw and Church Trainer Ministries. Please help us pray that the Lord will continue to send us more partners so we can expand His kingdom